looks at the floor and starts asking for forgiveness. It's very beautiful. I mean, I don't know if this appeals to you. It's very beautiful. You know, the earth is regarded as the mother. My nourisher, you gave birth to me, you nourished me. And still I'm going to set foot upon you. Please, forgive my... You know, just like we say, I'm sorry if my foot touches yours. So I'm putting my foot down on you. Please, forgive me. And from there on, it's one round of rituals and rituals and rituals and rituals. Prayers and rituals and prayers and rituals. Bathing is a ritual, brushing your teeth is a ritual, and cooking is a ritual, and you say grace before meal, and you sit down, and eating is considered ritual. The whole thing is packed with this kind of prayers and rituals. Action is inevitable, so pack that action with some kind of what was considered proper motivation. So, right action and right motivation were considered sufficient to take this thing out of karma. Understanding was not emphasized till Krishna came along. In ancient India, this is considered quite sufficient. What was the motivation? The motivation was going to heaven. That was the mischief, I think. That was the mischief. Because all the time there is a motivation there. Why am I doing this? Because I want to go to heaven. I don't want to go to hell. What's wrong with hell? I don't want to go to hell. I want to go to heaven. And so I am doing all this. Once Krishna saw that once some motivation was allowed and given the privileged label of right motivation, it opens the door to all sorts of mischief. Like, for instance, you can hate your enemy, you can kill your enemy. That's considered righteous, you'll get a medal. The more you kill, the bigger the medal becomes. If you kill one man, you're hanged. If you kill 10, you're promoted. If you kill 1,000, you are decorated. That's called the administration. Why is it so? Why is it right for me to kill so many of them? Because they are your enemies. And then I suddenly realize that all that I need do in order to kill all these people and get away with it is to call them enemies. I become politician. Then I'm all right. I'm all right then. Right? That is what Krishna saw. Krishna saw that as long as motivation was considered right, the problem cannot be solved. The mind will cook up a motivation for anything. Why must I do this? I give you more motivation. And I make that motivation sound right. So that if right motivation necessarily justifies an action and makes it right, I can always provide a motivation, I can call it a right motivation so that the action is justified and made into a right action. And so it is in the Gita, Bhagavad Gita, that trend was not only stopped but reversed. He threw the whole thing away and said, no, don't look for heaven. He doesn't say in so many words that heaven doesn't exist, but he at least says that it's useless going to heaven. Traigunya vishaya veda nistraigunya bhava arjuna. As long as you are caught up in this motivation, there is still a movement away from the center. And as long as there is movement away from the center, you will keep wandering. You will keep remaining confused. And there is no yoga. How to get back to the center? And how to discover what seeks motivation, what supplies the motivation, what thrives on the motivation, what provides the motivation, and what takes advantage of this motivation. Can one see that as the self, as the ego? It is the ego that seeks the motivation. It is the ego that needs the motivation. It is the ego that provides the motivation. And it is the ego that feeds on it and thrives on it. The discovery of this truth is Karma Yoga. The discovery of this truth is Karma Yoga. Discovery in the purest, simplest sense. Once the truth is discovered, it is like the jar being broken. It is the jar that covers or seems to enclose the space, and when that cover is removed, space is realized as indivisible. Discovery does not mean the coming into being of something which was not there before. Discovery merely means that the cover is shed, and when that cover is taken away, that which was forever one is seen to be indivisibly one at all times. To do this without stopping activity, knowing that action cannot be stopped, motion cannot be stopped. The motion has to be kept without the motivation. That's it. That's Karma Yoga. The motion has to be retained because it is inevitable. You cannot arrest the motion, but the motivation can be stopped. And by the discovery of the truth of the indivisibility of consciousness, the motion in consciousness is seen also to be beyond the self. And that is pure, selfless or unselfish life and living. Which is...
Could you repeat that, please?
Are you forgotten? When you realize that consciousness is indivisible and that motion is inherent in that consciousness, you realize that that motion is beyond self. That realization is true, unselfish or selfless action. Karma Yoga is therefore the action or the activity of a perfected man, perfected person, enlightened person. And yet, the steps towards this perfection are also regarded as karma yoga. What do I do? What are the steps I take in order that I may reach this realization? All that is also by courtesy included in the term karma yoga. Otherwise it's not, karma yoga is not what we do. You know, I'm doing, just because I'm washing dishes without being paid, I'm doing unselfish action karma yoga. That's a sort of extension by courtesy. Karma yoga in truth is the action of an enlightened person in whose vision there is no division at all, who has directly realized the indivisibility of consciousness and the indivisibility of consciousness and motion within it. Within it, therefore not within me.